This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery.
Hello and welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for March 19th, 2010. I'm Chris Gavin, and I will be reading synopses of three clinical articles and two laboratory investigations, which were published online today by the Journal of Neurosurgery. This clinical article is titled Prognostic Significance of Contrast-Enhancing Anaplastic Astrocytomas in Adults. It was written by Kaisorn, Chaichana, and colleagues. Patients harboring anaplastic astrocytomas typically have a poor prognosis, with median survival times of approximately 3 years following resection. However, a significant variability in individual outcomes remains, with some patients surviving for a few months and others for several years. The ability to predict patient outcomes based on preoperative variables would help prognosticate survival and may also guide treatment strategies. All patients with brain tumors undergo preoperative neuroimaging. In this study, the authors determined whether certain preoperative imaging characteristics, namely contrast enhancement, predict outcomes for patients harboring anaplastic astrocytomas. After multivariate analysis, their results showed that neuroimaging contrast enhancement of these tumors was independently associated with decreased survival and increased recurrence. These findings may help surgeons and patients design therapeutic strategies aimed at prolonging survival and minimizing morbidity for patients with these tumors. This clinical article is titled Quality of Life in Neuro-Oncology, Age Matters. It was written by Nadia Villieu and co-workers. In this study, the authors sought to explore the relationship between chronological age and quality of life in patients suffering from a primary brain tumor. The way patients deal with life-altering events is determined in large part by their developmental life stage. The authors therefore hypothesized that age would have a significant impact on the self-assessed well-being of patients. The authors also expected that patient age would determine which variables would affect quality of life. To validate their hypotheses, the authors tested the quality of life scores in 130 adults presenting with primary supratentorial tumors. Results confirmed that older patients have lower functional well-being and worse neurocognitive scores than younger patients. However, the age at which this differentiation developed was earlier than the authors had expected and suggests that disease accelerates the aging process. Furthermore, the factors that predicted well-being did differ depending on patient age. Thus, support from friends was a significant predictor of quality of life for younger adults, whereas the capacity to continue enjoying life was a significant predictor for older adults. Based on these findings, the authors submit that age must be considered when establishing tailored support programs. This laboratory investigation is titled Skin-Derived Precursors Differentiating into Dopaminergic Neuronocells in the Brains of Parkinson's Disease Model Rats. It was written by Dr. Higashida and Dr. Jitsuki and colleagues. In the author's previous study, they found that the amino acids 157 to 171 of von Hippel-Lindau protein induced neuronal differentiation of skin-derived precursors. In the present study, they observed increased dopamine levels in the striata of Parkinson's disease model rats after transplantation of differentiated skin-derived precursors. These dopamine levels were correlated with a reduction in the number of apomorphine-induced rotations. Moreover, transplanted skin-derived precursors, which were observed along the tract of transplantation, were positive for tyrosine hydroxylase and dopamine transporter. These results suggest that the transplantation of skin-derived precursors differentiated into neuronal cells using the specific peptide of von Hippel-Lindau protein can improve Parkinson's disease-like symptoms by producing dopamine in the striata of Parkinson's disease model rats. This clinical article is titled The Presigmoid Approach to Anterolateral Pontine Cavernomas. It was written by Eric Hauck and colleagues. Traditionally, lateral cavernomas of the pons have been resected using a variety of approaches, commonly retrosigmoid. However, the exposure of the more anterior pons is limited with the retrosigmoid approach. The author's goal in this study was to summarize their experience with the presigmoid approach for the resection of anterolateral pontine cavernomas as an alternative to the retrosigmoid route. Clinical data were reviewed in 9 patients who underwent resection of anterolateral pontine cavernomas via a presigmoid approach. Access to the pons was gained through a small, subtemporal, suboccipital craniotomy or craniectomy, combined with a posterior petrosectomy. This shifted the entry point of the surgical corridor laterally from the retrosigmoid to the presigmoid trajectory by 30 millimeters. The brainstem was entered through a so-called safe zone between the trigeminal nerve and the facial vestibulocochlear cranial nerve complex. Complete resection was achieved in all cases. No patient had recurrent events during follow-up, and all patients' modified Rankin scale scores were improved within 1 year of surgery. Only one patient experienced a new deficit. The onset of hearing loss in this patient was corrected with a hearing aid. In conclusion, the authors recommend the presigmoid approach for the resection of anterolateral pontine cavernomas. With this approach, the need for cerebellar retraction is nearly eliminated. The lateral presigmoid entry point creates a trajectory that allows complete resection of even deep lesions at the level of, or anterior to, the internal acoustic meatus. This laboratory investigation is titled Regional Vascular Relationships to the Foramen Ovale, an anatomical study with application to approaches to the external skull base with an emphasis on transcutaneous procedures for the treatment of trigeminal neuralgia. It was written by R. Shane Tubbs and co-authors. Transcutaneous methods are often used to approach the foramen ovale for treatment of patients with trigeminal neuralgia, for the biopsy of masses of the cavernous sinus, or for electrode placement in cases of temporal lobe epilepsy. However, reports exist of such procedures resulting in damage to the carotid artery, middle meningeal artery, and internal jugular vein. Therefore, the present study was performed to define landmarks for avoiding such vascular injuries. The author studied the extracranial surface of the foramen ovale with regard to surrounding vascular structures in adult cadavers. Based on the author's findings, they defined a safe zone around the foramen ovale. Posterolaterally, the middle meningeal artery was nearest the foramen ovale. Posteriorly and laterally, the internal jugular vein and maxillary artery were nearest the foramen, while anteromedially and medially, the internal carotid artery was nearest the foramen. Therefore, a zone around the foramen ovale at a circumference of less than 6 millimeters, excluding the foramen spinosum posterolaterally, would most likely avoid regional vessels. Additional knowledge of the vascular relationships to the external aspect of the foramen ovale may assist the neurosurgeon in minimizing complications during operative procedures.
Thank you for listening. Sign up in iTunes to get all our weekly podcasts delivered straight to you. To read all JNS articles published this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.